tonight is from the 18th chapter of the book of Revelation. In the 17th chapter of this book, there is a description of the doom of ecclesiastical Babylon, or the world church of the end time. In the 18th chapter, we have the destruction of commercial Babylon, the political system that originated in Babylon that will be judged by God very severely at the end of the tribulation period. I do want to take a little time to point out once again that all of this in the 17th chapter and the 18th chapter is an intermission or an interval of time. Back over in the 16th chapter there, beginning, well, at verse 17, when he talked about the seventh angel that poured out his vial, he went right on to say in verse 19, "And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give up her cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath." In other words, the judgment of Babylon was announced back in the 16th chapter. And so it seems as if the angel said to John, "Now listen, before I tell you the destruction of this, I want to point out a few facts about it." And so he began to describe that matter in the 17th chapter. And I believe that ecclesiastical Babylon will be destroyed by the middle of the week. So actually in the 17th chapter, he's going all the way back to the middle of the week and describing some events that will take place. When he shows the woman riding up on the back of the beast, he is showing the characteristics of the first part of the tribulation. But now in the 18th chapter, he goes past that matter in the 17th chapter, and he very plainly says in verse 1, "And after these things," that is, after the destruction of ecclesiastical Babylon. Now you say, well, why do you call the 17th chapter the destruction of ecclesiastical Babylon, and then you call the 18th chapter the destruction of commercial Babylon? Well, there's quite a bit of difference in the two if you look at it. First of all, religious Babylon is destroyed by the 10 kings of the revived Roman Empire. In other words, men destroy the world church. But when you come to the 18th chapter, you have God, by a divine intervention of judgment, destroying the political system of the end time. And men are not very happy that he has done that. While they hated the whore and seemed to rejoice when she was destroyed, it is said that when commercial Babylon falls, that the kings of the earth will be greatly alarmed and disturbed. So while they rejoice at the destruction of religious Babylon, they are very unhappy when ecclesiastical Babylon falls. They're happy, but when commercial Babylon falls, they're very unhappy. And that's what we're going to see in a portion of tonight's lesson. I don't know. I think some time before I try to teach this 18th chapter, that I ought to go over to the book of Jeremiah and just read the whole 51st chapter. Now, there are some that believe in Jeremiah 51 that those predictions have already occurred. I doubt that in their entirety that they have, if you'll read the whole chapter. You'll find quite a parallel of events between the Babylon that John described, this political one-world government of the end time, and the Babylon of the days of Jeremiah and Isaiah the prophet. I believe that Isaiah also speaks of the doom of Babylon. There is one statement in the book of Isaiah that I do not believe has ever been fulfilled in its entirety. Because when it says Babylon is destroyed, that even an Arab will not pitch his tent where this city was. And I'm told by those that have visited the plains of Shinar, near the mouth there of the Persian Gulf, where the old city of Babylon was located, that indeed there are some people that do pitch their tents in that place. And the statement is there that Babylon will fall and never rise again. Well, it does rise again here in the end time. So I'm inclined to believe that Isaiah and Jeremiah, while they may have described in a measure the destruction of Babylon in the days of Nebuchadnezzar Belshazzar and some of the others that lived in the latter stage of the kingdom, that the ultimate fulfillment of the passage there in the book of Jeremiah and those two in the book of Isaiah probably await the time of the doom of commercial Babylon, the very events that we're going to read about here in this 18th chapter. I would not be dogmatic on that, but I would state that is my honest opinion in the matter. All right, looking at the lesson outline, and we'll probably only go down to about verse 11 if we have the time to do that. There is in verse 1, 2, and 3 the fall of Babylon announced. We have the announcement of the fall of commercial Babylon. And then in verse 4 and 5 we have a call for separation from this political system of the end time. And then after that, the next verses there, verse 6, 7, and 8, give the indictment against commercial Babylon. And then, beginning there at verse 9 down through 11, you have the lamentation of the kings of the earth because of the fall of great Babylon. So again, I point out that there is some time lapse between the 17th chapter and the 18th chapter. After these things may very well mean after all of that in the 17th chapter. Because I would understand it that way, the way that it reads there, after these things, all that's been mentioned in chapter 17. Then he says, after these things I saw another angel. That is, an angel in addition to those seven angels that had the seven vials full of the last plagues of God's wrath to be poured out on the earth. Those mentioned back in the 16th chapter. And in addition to all the other angels thus far mentioned in this book too. And after these things I saw another angel come down from heaven. This is one of the elect angels. It is not a fallen angel, but it is an elect angel of God, having great power. The attribute of angels is always said to be power. I think about the passage there in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. It says the Lord Jesus will be revealed in flaming fire with His mighty angels. Then over there in the book of Psalms 103, verse 20 and 21, I'm guessing, just going from memory alone, it talks about how that the angels excel in strength and might. So angels have greater strength than we human beings have. And here we see there is an angel coming down from heaven that has great power. As if to say he has more than ordinary power. He has quite a feat to accomplish. And the earth was lightened with his glory. There are many people that maintain that this angel is Christ himself. And they believe that it's that same angel over there that came down from heaven and put his feet upon the sand, and I mean upon the sea and upon the land, and declared that time shall be no more. However, there is nothing, so far as I know in the Bible, unless it be these passages, to indicate that Jesus will ever come back from heaven when once he goes back at the rapture. He will not come back until the end of the tribulation. So I maintain that this is not Christ. It is a very exalted angel of God that will come down from heaven. It is not Jesus Christ, for I believe that He'll only come to take out the saints at the rapture, and then He'll come back at the end. He will not come any time in between. So, well, what about the two witnesses? They go up to meet Him. He doesn't come down to meet them. They go up to meet Him. So that won't answer the problem there. Some appeal to that. It just simply won't pan out in the end. So I'm going to say that this is a literal angel, and it is not an appearance of Christ in angelic form, as some maintain. I'll just say that it is a very exalted angel, very glorious angel, a very mighty angel. And that's all that I can say. His name is not given, so there'd be no need to speculate on that. And then let's note what he's going to do there as he pronounces this doom of Babylon. He announces the event to take place. And he cried mightily with a strong voice. Well, if he has this great power, why wouldn't he have a strong voice? And why couldn't he cry mightily? See, this verse confirms number one about the angel. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen. and is become the habitation of devils, better translated from the Greek text, demons, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Now let's back up and note a few facts stated here in this verse. First, there is the strong cry of the fall of Babylon. But why do we have the language, Babylon the Great is fallen, and then repeated again, is fallen? Why would we have the statement, is fallen? Why not just is fallen and stop? Well, I believe that he's showing us something here. He's showing us that Babylon is going to fall in a twofold sense. Religious Babylon has already fallen back in the 17th chapter. And so he says, Babylon is fallen. And that last is fallen refers to the doom of commercial Babylon. So you see, God is going to judge Babylon in its religious form and its political form. Hence the angel says, Babylon the Great is fallen, is fallen. Now the last is fallen refers to the actual political capital of the Antichrist, the great political center of the end time. And then he tells what that this city is going to become. He says that it is become the habitation of devils. It ought to be demons. So the capital of Antichrist will be the stronghold of demon spirits. Perhaps there has never been a city in all the world that will be so plagued with demons as the capital city of Antichrist in the end time. And then he says that Babylon has become the habitation of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. And while normally I would not try to spiritualize the word bird there, because of the stress on the unclean and hateful bird and foul spirit, the hold of every foul spirit, that's demons again, are fallen angels. If you're going to make a distinction there between demons and the fallen angels, you probably have a good evidence there, because you have the habitation of devils, that would take in the demons, and the hold of every foul spirit, that'd be fallen angels. And I do believe that they're separate companies of spirit beings. I do not believe they're synonymous. Some do. But I believe here's one place that would indicate that to me. So you have demon spirits, you have foul spirits, that's angels. And then I would see no reason why that he would mention unclean and hateful birds. Why not horses and cows and billy goats and all the rest? Why birds? Sometimes the term bird is used in a figurative sense. And it could be that it has a figurative sense here. Now you say, well, where would you find proof of that? Matthew 13:32. You remember the parable of the wheat and the tares? Then you remember the parable there about the mustard tree? And it says that the fowls of the air lodged in the branches. When Jesus gave the interpretation, he said the birds of the air are the emissaries of the devil. Now, while it may have that spiritual meaning, in other words, it may be another way of describing these foul fallen angels and demon spirits, I'm more inclined to the idea that it is to be taken in the literal sense. And I'm going to tell you why. When God judges Babylon, and when the battle of Armageddon takes place, the fowls of the air are going to eat the foods. That's what you have in the 19th chapter. Because God is going to summons all the birds of the air, the fowls of heaven, to come and to eat the flesh of kings and captains and mighty men and all of that. So I think what he's showing here is the fact that you not only have demon spirits here, but you also have all of these fowls gathering, vultures, to devour the flesh of those bodies in the battle of Armageddon. So I take the fowls here in the literal sense. I grant it can have a spiritual meaning, but I'm inclined to the idea that if he wanted to refer to fallen angels and demons, that would have come in under the term devils or foul spirit. So I believe that he's talking about literal birds, real fowls of the air. They're going together there at the capital city of Antichrist. I want to connect with this a passage over here in the book of Isaiah that mentions these birds, and There's another one in the book of Isaiah that names them all, including owls and the like. But look in the 13th chapter of Isaiah. And this is the doom of Babylon. Isaiah speaking of the same doom of Babylon. Somebody said, well, he's talking about Babylon in the days of Daniel. I rather doubt it, because not all this happened in the days of Daniel. Let's read the latter part of that, starting there at the 19th verse of Isaiah, the 13th chapter. And Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, this destruction of Babylon is a destruction by fire, like fell on Sodom and Gomorrah. Is that what happened when Cyrus conquered Babylon? Well, he may have burned some of the city, but I don't think any fire and brimstone out of heaven fell. If so, where's the history on it? That's why I'm saying that Isaiah and Jeremiah are speaking of the future doom of Babylon, just like John is. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there. Neither shall the shepherds make their fold there. And travelers to that place tell me that that has actually not been so of the fall of old Babylon as we know it. There have been tents pitched there. There have been shepherds seen there. So then I maintain again that Isaiah must be referring to that time John does, when it'll never again be inhabited. And then let's note how that he mentions the wild beast as well as these various doleful creatures here. And there's one word there that I'm going to tell you something about in the Hebrew. But wild beast of the desert shall lie there. Now this is Babylon in its desolate form after God has judged it and it's fallen. And their houses shall be full of doleful creatures. And owls shall dwell there. And satyrs shall dance there. I don't have time to go into a lengthy discussion, but in the Hebrew, that word satyrs does not leave much doubt but what that's demons. So Isaiah said what? Now he said, you're going to have owls, that's fowls, isn't it? They're going to dwell there, and he said the demons are going to dance in the ruin of this city. I don't know. Don't go home and get too alarmed or too scared, but I'm going to drop this off and you can go home and think about it. Have you ever heard about the haunted houses? They're always deserted, aren't you, and desolate. Well, where is these demons playing here? They're playing in this old run-down city. Ghost town, in other words. I'm just pointing out what the Bible said now. You can take it for whatever it's worth. And the wild beast of the island shall cry in their desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant palaces. And her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged. So it seems to me that Isaiah the prophet describes the city of Babylon in a desolate form, just exactly like the one the angel has announced there in that 18th chapter. You have demons there, and you have these unclean fowls there. You have everything exactly like the Lord has foretold by the pen of John. So I maintain they're speaking of the same time. Now, sometime you ought to read Isaiah 34, verse 11 through 15, and you'll have another description, almost like the one I read. But I'll not read the two because they're almost synonymous. Somebody's going to ask this, and I'd better stop right now and say something about it. What is this Babylon? Now, we have already discussed what ecclesiastical Babylon is, but what is commercial Babylon? Well, there are three ideas about it, and I'm inclined to one very strongly, and I will stress that one, and I believe that's literally what it means. There are many people that believe that commercial Babylon is the city of Rome because of the statement there in verse 18 of the 17th chapter. There are others that maintain that it is the actual city of Babylon, near the mouth of the Persian Gulf in the plains of Shinar. In other words, it's that same city that's spoken of where Nimrod lived, and Semiramis, and all of these people back over there in Genesis chapter 9 and 10 and on from that. And I believe that this city, Babylon, is mentioned something like 260 times or more in the Bible. And always it refers to that literal city that was on the banks of the Euphrates there in the plains of Shinar. There are others then that will not accept the literal, and they say it's the great capital of Antichrist. We don't know where it is. It's somewhere. Wherever his capital is, that's where it'll be. And that'll be the Babylon of the end time, like the Babylon of the Old Testament. But it will not necessarily be one and the same. Well, I'll tell you what I think. I believe it's literally the city of Babylon. I believe that it will be built on the plains of Shinar, near the Persian Gulf. Already in that section of the world, some of the Arab nations are talking about the rebuilding of the city of Babylon. And at least one of those countries has set aside $30 million to get the project underway. Tell me where most of the oil in the world that is known is found. It's right in the Persian Gulf area. Now, can you imagine what would happen in a few years if oil becomes more scarce and they begin to rely more heavily upon this Persian Gulf area where the black gold is found in great abundance? Why couldn't there be built there a great metropolitan city that would even rival the old Babylon of Nebuchadnezzar with his hanging gardens and all of this? And if so, that will be the capital of Antichrist. And it's remarkable that the Arab people will probably furnish the money to build that. There is also talk in that same area that's called by historians the cradle of the nations. And that's where all the world started out, if you'll read the book of Genesis, right there on the banks of the Euphrates in what's called the Fertile Crescent. That's very fertile soil in that vicinity. And there's talk about damming up the Euphrates and Tigris River and using that vast amount of water to irrigate all this region and grow beautiful crops. And if so, they say that it will rival the Garden of Eden that was located right there in that spot. So my opinion is, the more and more that I study the Bible, I believe the actual city of Babylon is literally going to be built again. It's going to stand right there in the plains of Shinar, right there in the Persian Gulf area, where all that black gold is, and that will be the seat of Antichrist's kingdom. Now, I believe the religious seat will be in Rome, but I believe the political seat will be here on the banks of the Euphrates, just where old Babylon was. Now, you see, you'd have to have two capitals in a sense. If the political element's going to destroy the religious element, it can't be the same town. You'd burn both towns at one time, see. But if you have two different capitals, you have one in Rome, and you have one then on the banks of the Euphrates, then one can be destroyed by the other, and then God can destroy the political elements, you see. So I maintain that it's the actual city of Babylon that's going to be rebuilt. And I think Babylon, that started the world off with false religion and a corrupt political system, is going to be revived in a very great form there in the end time. That will be the seat of the beast that's mentioned in the 13th chapter. That's the throne that the devil's going to give him, and that city to be built there in the plains of Shinar. Now let's note, as we go on, we've told you now what we believe that this Babylon is. We go down to the third verse, and we find some of the evil that this city has been guilty of. For all nations have drunk the wine of the wrath of her fornication. They have joined themselves to this political system of the union of church and state, that they might greatly be profited from a worldly standpoint. And the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. And the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Now, all nations have been drunk with the wine of the wrath of her fornication simply means that commercial Babylon has had evil political relationships with all the nations on earth. And then the statement there about the merchants waxing rich shows that the wealth collected through the influence of this apostate church that has been taken over by a political system is what is there intended. Furthermore, the entire political system will prosper and be enhanced with wealth at the very blessings, not of God, but of Satan himself. You remember how that the devil promised Jesus in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 8, that I will give you all the kingdoms of the world if you'll fall down and worship me. Well, here's going to be a time when all the kingdoms of the world will be in the hands of the devil. By the permission of God, he's going to turn it over to him, just like he turned Job over to him for a time of trial and all of that. He's going to turn them over to the devil that he may punish the inhabitants of the earth to some degree. So there you have some description about this Babylon. Now let's note verse 4 and 5 because there's strong language employed here, and it shows how that God has some people in Babylon. Sometimes I'm told that all saved people are in the church. My question is, why aren't these people in the church here? They're saved. Here's some saved people not in the church. Sometimes people have asked me, said, show me some saved people not in the church. Here's some in Babylon. How much worse off can you get than that? And I heard another voice from heaven. This is not the angel. It's some other angel, perhaps, or maybe God himself. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people. I believe it's God. He's calling them his people, see. That ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. You will plainly observe that God has some people there in Babylon. He had some people in Sodom. He had Lot and some of his family there. So somebody said, do you believe that God has some people in false churches? I sure do. I sure do. Right here is the proof of it. This is the false church of the end time, and God's got some people in it. They're saved. They're not in the Lord's church, but they're saved, nevertheless, in the family of God. But they're in false churches. So the Lord says, come out of them. Get out of this political religious system. He doesn't want his people in it. Now, I'll tell you something. That system is in the world today. Now, it's going to come to full culmination in the tribulation period. But that political and religious system exists today. And God calls on his people to come out of it. Somebody said, well, what if they don't come out? Then they'll be partaker of her sins. They'll be partaker of her sins. No, that's not going to send them to hell, but it's going to cause them to suffer. Because if my people does not come out, then they'll be partaker of her sins. And they'll receive her plagues. In other words, they'll suffer the punishment that God metes out to this religious political system of the end time. So he calls upon his people, come out of her, my people. You can go back and read in the book of Jeremiah, there in chapter 51 and verse 6, God called his people out back over there in the Old Testament time. Jeremiah 51:6-45 is a call for God's people to come out. So God has some people in false churches. He wants them to come out, though. That's plainly stated there. And if they do not, they'll be partaker of all of that heretical teaching, all of those sins, and even those plagues that God will pour out upon them. So in other words, they'll suffer the punishment of these false prophets. That's what happened to them. And then it shows how awful the sins are of Babylon in verse 5. For her sins have reached unto heaven. Now I wonder just how many sins that'd have to be. Have you ever wondered? I've read that and often wondered. Think about sins piling up one upon another until they reach all the way to heaven. And the original word there is the word that's sometimes used when you lay brick on top, one on top of the other. It means that the sins of Babylon have been piling up century after century. From the very days of the beginning of the city, back in the book of Genesis, they've been piling up, until now they've reached heaven, God's throne. And he must judge this political religious system of the end time. Her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. You know, God will tolerate a great deal of sin sometime, even on the part of his people or on the part of the unsaved. But there is a limit to the forbearance of God. Finally, sin will pile up on top of sin until God will judge the sinners. Think about a statement in Genesis 15 and 16. I've read it many, many times. God said, the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. It sounds as if there God had a cup of wrath. And when their sins got up to the brim of the cup, he'd judge them. But he said, they've done bad, but they haven't gone as far as I'm going to let them go. Their iniquity is not full. You remember what Jesus said about those wicked scribes and Pharisees in that 23rd chapter of the book of Matthew in verse 32? He said, "Fill up then the measure of your fathers. Let your sins pile up until judgment comes." In the case of these people, it came in A.D. 70. Then there's a statement over here in Thessalonians that I've oftentimes connected with this, and it shows how that God will let people's sins pile up to a certain point, and then He'll judge. And He only knows what that point is. We do not. Look over here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 16. "Forbidding us to speak to the Gentiles that they might be saved, to fill up their sins always." The idea again of a man having a cup like, filling up his sins until it reaches the top, and then God judges it. "For the wrath is come upon them to the uttermost." So what's happened here in the case of Babylon? Well, she's filled up that golden cup with her iniquities to the top. That golden cup in her hand is full all the way to the top of sin. And the sin is so great that it's reached unto God's throne in heaven. God's called His people out because He's going to judge it. Now, God will call His people out before He judges the place like He did Lot. But if they don't come out, then they'll suffer because of it. So He's calling His people out because He's getting ready to destroy this thing. And then note how that the law of divine retribution is stated again there in that sixth verse. Except this time it has become a little excessive. You know, the Old Testament said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Burning for burning. Well, in the case of the enormity of the sins of commercial Babylon, God has said she's going to get double what she sowed. Not only going to reap what she sowed, but she's going to have a bumper crop. Great harvest. Listen. "Reward her even as she rewarded you. And double unto her double according to her works." This evil political system of the end time is so corrupt that the law of divine retribution not only requires that she be punished in proportion to her sins, but twice what they deserve. That speaks of the enormity of the sin of commercial Babylon. Double according to her works. Double according to her works. So in some cases, God does not just merely punish in proportion to the sin, but He makes it double what it could have been ordinarily. Never has any group of people been judged like this Babylon of the end times. God has often judged an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, burning for burning, sword for sword. But now He's going to require double. Double. How enormous must be the sin of Babylon. "Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works. In the cup which she hath filled to her double." Now her sins have reached to heaven, and God's going to give her double. So that means He's going to punish her double. Whatever that means. However far that judgment would go. I can't conceive of it, but it's a terrible thing to contemplate. Then He tells us more in verse 7. Some of the sins that she's been guilty of. "How much she has glorified herself." What's been her sin? Self-glorification. Very common sin in the human race today. But very common in the end time. You know, more and more as we enter the time when we approach the great tribulation, I see man becoming boasters and proud and glorifying themselves. And more the world becomes a fertile field for Arminianism, which is nothing in the world but the worship of man, worship of the creature more than the Creator. And that's going to go on getting worse and worse until all the world will worship and wonder after the man of sin. The culmination of Arminianism is the worship of man, the worship of the creature rather than the Creator. So she has glorified herself, not glorified God. She ought to have done that. She has glorified herself. And lived deliciously. In other words, she's lived it up in the world. Had a good time. Plenty of material goods. Great wealth. Great abundance. So much torment and sorrow give her. In proportion to all of this wealth accumulated, in proportion to all of this self-glorification, God says, punish her double for all of that. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen, and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Well, sometime you ought to read Isaiah 47, verse 7 to 9. You'll find that he describes Babylon saying that I'll not have any sorrow. I believe he speaks of this same time. And then we go to verse 8. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day. You know that it's taken man better almost 6,000 years to build this religious political system of the end time. How long is God going to need to destroy it? Look at that. One day. You know, that's exactly the same length of time in Jeremiah 51 in verse 8. It said God's going to destroy it in the day. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day. Death. Now what will be the plagues? Let's count them. Death and mourning and famine. So you can see how that the famine would result in the death. It all hooks together there. And she shall be utterly burned with fire. The law of divine retribution. What did she do to the great scarlet whore? She burned her with fire. Now then God is burning the political system with fire. An eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, burning for burning. The law of divine retribution once again. For strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. Now, the scarlet whore was judged by the 10 kings, but it's God that judges the commercial system of the end time. So there you have it. Exactly what's spoken of there in Jeremiah 51, verse 25 and 58. He speaks about fire in verse 58, and then in verse 25 he says that Babylon will be like a mountain that has been burned. So I believe that Jeremiah 51 fits right in with this myself. I believe that if it had a fulfillment in the time of the prophet, it certainly has its ultimate fulfillment during the time of the tribulation, as we see here. Then he does nothing more than describe some of the sins of Babylon as we go further here. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and live deliciously with her shall bewail her. Now they rejoiced when the whore was put to death, but now they're crying. I could just hear them almost. And lamented for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning. You remember how that Abraham, some distance from Sodom and Gomorrah, what did he see? He saw a great smoke rising up in the heavens. He knew right then what had happened to the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, here's all the kings of the earth, not just the 10 kings, but all the kings of the earth that have reaped great wealth by being connected to this one world government of the end time. They're lamenting, they're weeping and wailing. What are they saying? They say, there goes my money. There goes my stocks and bonds. What's happened to my mortgage? What am I going to do? Think about all this I've accumulated. It's all gone up in smoke. How transitory the things of this world are. They're here today and gone tomorrow. We can have them for a few hours and God can take them away in an hour. We can spend a lifetime accumulating them and God can burn them up in 1 hour just like He will this city. So don't put too much trust in earthly things. They don't endure very long as we can see here. So they're crying and they're weeping and they said, there goes our money. There goes the great world banks. Look what a mess we're in. What's going to be done? We're without any money. There's where all the food's coming from. That's the commercial center of the world, and it's in shambles. What are we going to do? Well, it'll create famine. That's what it's going to do. Standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city, Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. I said it took men nearly 6,000 years to build this great religious and political system. But it only takes God 1 hour to get rid of it. When He sets out to judge, He judges with swift judgment. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her. There goes all of our dry goods, they said. We don't have anything left. For no man buyeth their merchandise anymore. So all the commercial world will almost be stopped at this point. You see, in the one world government, they're going to have one great commercial center where everything will go through that. It'll have to go through that. And it can't go through anything else. And God's going to judge that great commercial center, the kingdom of Antichrist. So they're going to weep over the loss of their trade with the city. They say, well, we're bankrupt. We don't have any place to sell our goods. What are we going to do? They've set their heart upon material things, and God's taken them all away. Could this be the time that James speaks of over there in chapter 5 when he says the rich men will weep and howl for the misery that's coming upon them? Say that their gold and silver is cankered and the rust of them will be a witness against them. Then he goes on to say, behold, the judge standeth before the door. The Lord returns and all of that. Is that what he's speaking of? I don't know. I've often wondered. Maybe the same passage should be compared here with this 18th chapter. Well, we're going to stop there. We've said enough tonight to send you home with a lot to think about. And we'll see the further destruction of this commercial Babylon as we come to the end of the chapter in our next lesson.